They ain't misbehaving. They're just behaving.
Ain't misbehaving, saving my love for you.
Welcome to this episode of Ain't Misbehaving.
I'm Dr. Louisa, and I'm here to talk about your pets, some problems you may have,
and this episode's bonus question. Here is the answer to last episode's bonus question. How can you go for 8 days without sleeping? Well, you can easily go for 8 days without sleeping by sleeping at night.
When living with our cats and dogs, there are often problems that arise.
We all need help sometimes. Today, I want to talk about where to get professional help for your dog or cat that might be driving you crazy. What do you do when you want help with training your dog, or if there is an emotional issue to deal with? There are a great number and wide variety of people willing to take your money. And just so you know, the dog training field does not require certification for people to hang out a shingle. Want to get a manicure or a haircut? The person you go to must be licensed by the state. How about learning to drive a car? Your instructor must be licensed. Also, if you see a hypnotherapist, they are licensed. Even the telephone solicitor who calls your phone must be licensed, but not your dog trainer. And anyone can call themselves an animal behaviorist. Anyone but me, that is. More on that later. I had a conversation with Dr. Vali Parthasaranthi, who is a veterinarian, has a PhD in behavior, has a behavior and training business, yet still, like me, cannot call herself a behaviorist. This is a portion of the conversation I had with her in 2017.
My name is Vali Parthasarathy. I go by Dr. Vali, and I'm a veterinary behavior resident here in Portland, Oregon. As a veterinary behavior resident, I'm working towards board certification towards becoming a specialist in behavior and veterinary medicine. So it's kind of the equivalent of an animal psychiatrist combined with therapist.
Are there differences in board certification as far as subspecialties or anything like that yet?
Not in behavior.
Oh, okay.
Not in behavior. There's one specialty.
Mm-hmm.
So we focus on both medical care of behavioral patients as far as psychopharmacology,
mm-hmm.
So medications to help manage neurotransmitter function. The other thing that we focus on is developing behavior modification plans. So
mm-hmm.
So that's why we do the psychiatric part of it, as well as some of the behavior therapy part of it as well.
Sure.
So our practice is in near downtown Portland. We have 6 people working with us now. So
wow.
There's myself, my co-owner here at Synergy, who's also a dog trainer. A certified professional dog trainer. We have 2 other certified professional dog trainers on staff and 2 client care coordinators. So,
oh, wow, what do they do?
So the client care coordinators handle reception, they handle communications between myself or some of our other staff and our patients and clients, trying to make sure that everything is going the way that it should be, trying to keep us on track. So that's what the client care coordinators do. The trainers, the way that I think about how our roles are is that I decide what's going on and what to do,
mm-hmm.
and the trainers go ahead and make it happen. So
oh.
The trainers help implement the training
nice.
Protocols that I recommend for my patients.
Yeah, wow. So what are you doing for your residency in order to become board certified?
So for the residency, a few different things. I do have a mentor who's a board certified veterinary behaviorist.
And that is?
And that's Dr. Kenneth Martin,
oh,
who's
right.
in Austin, Texas. And he and I worked together on several cases. When we first started off, he needed to observe me directly
mm-hmm.
for the first several cases. And then after that, he would we would talk about cases, or he would review the cases that I wrote up, and give me feedback on what he thought was good, or things that he thought would be additional things to consider in the treatment of these patients, which is really great, because as a doing only behavior, it is something of a small field. So being able to have other people to bounce ideas off of and to be able to talk to is really invaluable. The other things that I do is that I am required to do a fair amount of coursework and reading books, articles, staying up to date on what's been learned about behavior of different species of animals. So while our practice primarily works with dogs and cats, that's not what we're limited to. So we also work with birds and horses and other species. Mm-hmm. So part of the residency is to learn about the variety of behaviors in different species, finding out what's normal, learning what's normal, what's abnormal, and figuring out how to take those and work with them in an applied setting so that we can help clients with their particular pets.
Wow. So this is a non-conforming residency, is that right?
That's right.
That's what it's called? Okay, because you're not associated with a university per se.
Correct.
Okay.
So I'm very lucky because as a behavior resident, I do have the option to work out of my own practice.
Yeah. And because how many universities offer that?
I can't tell you how many off the top of my head, but I know that not all universities do.
Right. So it's probably less than a dozen, I would think.
I'd say that it's less than a dozen. I'd say that from what I'm remembering, I believe that most of the residents are non-conforming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's really a nice option.
Absolutely. I wouldn't have been able to do this if it wasn't for that option.
Yeah.
So, because I already had a practice that I started off and had been establishing, and
mm-hmm.
getting up and going to a university just wasn't going to be an option for me.
Yeah, I understand. That's kind of where I was when the behavior specialty became available. Mm-hmm. I think it was like in the mid-90s or something.
Yeah, around about then.
Yeah. And, you know, there was no way that I could go back. And they didn't have non-conforming residencies at that time. Mm-hmm. So. But it didn't seem, I don't know, my clients don't seem to care.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. And I'm trying to retire anyway. I'm just wondering if there's anything else I need to get from you as far as the differences between behavior consultants, because anyone can call themselves a behaviorist except me.
Right. Until I started the residency, I was in a very similar position as you, that I couldn't call myself a veterinary behaviorist. Now, mm-hmm. I do have a PhD mm-hmm. in behavior, from that standpoint, I could be considered a PhD behaviorist.
Mm-hmm.
However, without that, because of licensing laws and ethics in the veterinary field, somebody who's not board certified as a veterinary behaviorist can't call themselves a veterinary behaviorist. So I can't call myself a veterinary behaviorist.
Not yet.
But it's true, because pretty much anybody can claim to be a dog trainer, claim to be a behavioral consultant, because there's no regulation on that particular profession.
Mm-hmm. Which is troubling.
It is, because if you think about why it is that different professions are licensed, or managed, most of the time it's because there's some sort of public health risk.
Mm-hmm.
And when people are working with dogs, things that you do or don't do can lead to significant public health risks as well. So that is a big concern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But there's behavior technicians too.
Yes. So there is a specialty program for veterinary technicians in behavior as mm-hmm. well as other areas of veterinary medicine.
Yeah, cool. I know there are trainers who they've gone through different programs, like mm-hmm. APDT, mm-hmm. the Association, what is that, American?
No, Association of Professional Dog Trainers.
Oh, okay. Yeah, right, thank you.
Yeah, Association of Professional Dog Trainers.
Right. Yeah. So there's the CPDT.
Right.
Yeah.
The certification program for that.
And I went through that mm-hmm. and just to see what it was like and mm-hmm. whatnot. And it's fairly rigorous. I mean, you need to know the laws of learning,
mm-hmm.
which are really, really important. So mm-hmm. the CPDT does mean something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the CBDT does mean that that at least you should understand it.
Yeah.
What it doesn't do at this point, or at least the beginning levels of it doesn't do at this point, as my understanding, is that it doesn't have any sort of oversight. Mm-hmm. So because someone does have a CPDT doesn't necessarily mean that they're experienced or using methodology that you might prefer for your particular dog.
Right, right. So it's the KA, which is what? Knowledge?
Knowledge assessed. There's the knowledge assessed and the skills, knowledge and skills assessed, the KSA.
Okay.
And I think that maybe one of those has at least video. I think that that one at least has some videotaping so they can see how you do.
Right.
But I'm not sure how much oversight they have.
Yeah. At least it's a step up from...
Mm-hmm. It's a step up from nothing,
yeah.
Certainly.
Yeah.
So it does indicate at least a certain level of knowledge that had been done in order to take that test. And mm-hmm. I'd say that the vast majority of people who are CPDT, have that knowledge and they do take it and, work with the pets in a more positive way.
Yeah.
So... how do you know who is a good person to help you? As Dr. Volley said before, licensing is not available for dog trainers, but there are certifications available to trainings and others who work with behavior. There is quite an alphabet soup of organizations of trainers and behavior consultants, so let me go through them and lay it all out in, I hope, is a logical manner. For trainers, one of the letter combinations on the business card to look for are APDT. APDT is the Association of Professional Dog Trainers. APDT supports science-based methods of training and behavior modification, as well as the requirement that the animal's welfare be paramount during training sessions. The APDT adheres to the concept of LIMA, which is least intrusive, minimally aversive. This requires trainers to use the most humane and effective tactics to achieve behavior change. Anyone can become a member of APDT. They aren't required to use least intrusive, minimally invasive methods. Termination of membership is acted upon if the member engages in cruelty, abuse, or neglect of animals or humans, crimes against humanity, or of violence against animals or humans. So, if the person you are considering is an APDT member, that's good, but not necessarily the best. CCPDT is the Certification Council for Professional Dog Trainers that arose from the APDT and provides a more rigorous process to become CPDT or a certified professional dog trainer. There are two levels of certification. CPDT KA is knowledge assessed, and CPDT KSA is knowledge and skills assessed. These certificates require not only several hundred hours of experience, but also an examination that covers instruction skills, learning theory, ethology, and use of equipment. There is also a requirement for continuing education to keep their certification current, and certificate holders must renew their certification every 3 years. So for trainers, look for CPDT certification. But be aware that the Certification Council for Pet Dog Trainers does not limit its certificate profile to one type of dog trainer or one type of training discipline. With that understanding, the CCPDT does not forbid the use of electronic collars. Other programs that use LIMA are the Karen Pryor Academy and the Academy for Dog Trainers with Gene Donaldson. Karen Pryor is the one who brought operant conditioning to dogs from the marine mammals, where she started. She was a marine mammal trainer in the 1960s and learned quickly that discipline and corrections did not work well with dolphins. If a dolphin did not like what was happening, they would simply sink to the bottom of the tank and disengage. and it is hard to reward a dolphin with a fish when they are in the middle of the pool. Clicker training allowed the trainer to mark the behavior and reinforce when the animal came to the edge of the pool. Her landmark book called Don't Shoot the Dog, published in 1984, is still an excellent book to this day. Jean Donaldson is another pioneer in the field of dog training. She is the founder and director of the San Francisco SPCA Academy for Dog Trainers. In 2005, she published the book Culture Clash, which examines some of the myths that we have about dogs. If you want to take your dog to a class, it is best to watch a trainer in class and even talk to some of the people who have been through a class. And for any training class you go to, never let any trainer do anything to your dog that you do not want. And remember, when someone boasts that they have 10 years of experience, is that really 10 years, or is it 1 year of experience 10 times? CPDT, Karen Pryor, and Jane Donaldson's organizations certify trainers. There are several associations that certify animal behavior consultants. A consultant works one-on-one with the client and pet on some of the more difficult problems. The Certification Council for Professional Dog Trainers also certifies behavior consultants as well as trainers. The letters CBCC is Certified Behavior Consultant Canine. Their exam covers a lot, such as applied behavior analysis, ethology, body language, observational skills, health, development, life stages, anatomy, and physiology. A person has to really know all of this to become certified by the Certification Council for Professional Dog Trainers. The International Association of Animal Behavior Consultants, or IAABC, also certifies behavior consultants. There are two levels of certification. Certified membership requires a candidate to have at least 3 years and 500 hours of experience in animal behavior consultation, 3 written case studies, 4 written case scenarios, and 3 letters of recommendation. Associate certified membership requires a candidate to have at least 300 hours of experience in animal behavior consultant, 2 written case studies, and 3 letters of recommendation. Both of these memberships offer a step up from someone who only calls themselves a behavior consultant. The Animal Behavior Society, or ABS, is dedicated to promoting and advancing the scientific study of animal behavior. Members of ABS study behavior across all levels of biological organization under natural and controlled conditions and using descriptive and experimental approaches. Certification in the ABS requires advanced degrees in biology and animal behavior. There are 2 types of ABS certification. Certified Applied Animal Behaviorist, or CAAB, and Associate Certified Applied Animal Behaviorist, a CAAB. For the CAAB, the general approach in education would be to earn a Bachelor of Arts or a Bachelor of Science in either biology or psychology, and then a PhD in animal behavior. The Associate Certified Applied Animal Behaviorist would require a master's with an emphasis on behavioral science and animal behavior. Each of these would require an extensive application to the Animal Behavior Society, including case studies. Then there are veterinarians who have done a residency and passed the board exam, becoming a board-certified veterinary behaviorist. The letters after their name would be DACVB, meaning Diplomat of the College of Veterinary Behavior. So, letters to look for are CPDT, CBCC, IAABC, CAAB, and DACVB. It's as easy as ABC.
Oh, and an update. In 2020, Dr. Vali Parthasaranthi passed her board exam and is now a veterinary behaviorist. Myself? Well, I recently retired and I am not going back to do a residency. I will just sit with my 50 years of behavior education and consulting and feel good about all the dogs and cats I have helped.
Join us again for more sagas from the world of pet behavior problems. This is Dr. Louisa reminding you.
They ain't misbehaving. They're just behaving.
I don't stay out late. Don't care to go. I'm home about eight, just me and my radio. Ain't misbehaving, saving my love for you. Ain't misbehaving, saving my love for you.